Welcome to the DevCon Archives, featuring top sessions from the latest DevCon, which took place in Bangkok in November 2024. These episodes spotlight some of the best talks from the largest Ethereum developer conference, showcasing the technical advancements, mission, projects, and novel ideas shaping the Ethereum ecosystem. All talks have been recorded. You can find them on archive.devcon.org. Let's dive into today's featured talk.
Hello, everyone. And can you hear me? Awesome. I'm Vaughan McKenzie-Landell. I'm one of the co-founders of Butter. We've been working in the governance space for a very long time, and obviously very excited about futark in prediction markets, and that's why we're all here. We have this incredible panel full of lots of people who I love and admire, and I'm going to just hand over to each of them to give a very short introduction, and then we'll kick off.
I'm Martin. So in a previous life in Gnosis, we started with prediction markets and wanted to implement futarchy and other things. So in general, I'm absolutely a super big fan of that. But I think on this panel, I will a little bit play the skeptic here, because I think as Robin mentioned, you have the idea and then you have all the details that need to be figured out. So I think I can a little bit bring in that perspective.
I just talk, so I'm Robin Hanson.
So I'm Calvin, also Chaos Thief. I'm the co-founder of futarchy.fi. We just announced our project a few days ago. Our plan is to help DAOs and other organizations make great, impactful, positive decisions.
Hi everyone. I'm CJ from Limitless. We're building, basically we're processing around $1 million in a day in bets right now for like 0-day contracts on financial markets. I believe that like with crypto we can build the world's largest economy on chain outside the jurisdiction of any one particular nation state. And I think that as well as that, we need to build really efficient global marketplaces on top of the infrastructure. And so that's what we're doing at Limitless Labs.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate that. So we're here at DEAC Day. And so the first question is, how do prediction markets tie to DEAC? How do prediction markets and epistemic tech make the biggest impact in the vein of DEAC on differential progress, defense, and democracy? Over to any one of the panelists.
One ring to rule them all. If you could have reliable prediction markets on whatever policy question you have, then you can just do better on all of your other areas of life. You could have better know how to pursue longevity, better know how to pursue decentralization, whatever it is you're trying to do, having better information on that can make you do that better. So could we do much better?
And how does that map directly to, say, for example, defense?
I can just replicate that. I think the promise is very clear. So the promise is whether we talk about even simple things like this community node or from micro decisions, whether to show that community node or not to show that, to extremely large macro decisions, should we raise the interest rate or should we make this huge defense spending here or there. In general, the promise is that this is a tool for more robust decision making, to bring in to have a better quality of bring in information that actually shows the true impact of a decision.
So I'm going to make a comment here. Over the last few weeks, everybody has seen a lot. Lots of people are talking about. Prediction markets, of course, predicting who is going to win the election, and this made generated a lot of excitement. But actually, the most interesting thing is not like predicting probabilities. That's what normal prediction markets do, but predicting the consequences of things. So, if you could have, for instance, conditional markets on inflation, on GDP growth, on spending, unemployment conditional on candidates, right? This would be even much more interesting for democracy. You could actually see like a scorecard for the candidates, right? Like a game, you can pick one, this one's better on this one, this one's better on this other thing, right? So this is the promise of using conditional markets for decision making.
Yeah. Sorry, Mane, go
ahead. Maybe let me throw in one kind of concept to challenge this idea. So to say, I mean, I'm just pulling up here CoinGecko and look at prices of crypto. And, well, they change by 6-7% a day. So I think prediction markets rely on the assumption that markets are so efficient that out of those prices we can get reliable information. Or better information, but I would argue, well, there is also a lot of noise in markets, and I would say that markets here prices change by 6% is largely not related to any meaningful signal, but I need to be careful in the statement, but there's still a lot of noise. So that's I guess my question: how is there enough signal in the noise?
So when you compare head-to-head, this mechanism to other ones, consistently this wins. So that means all those other mechanisms have more than 6% mistake. Think about any committee you've ever been on. Think about the gossip network. Do you really think that's within 6% of the truth? Come on. Like, being 6% close is great compared to what we usually have.
Yeah, I guess I would come at the whole question from a little bit of like a different angle. I think that definitely prediction markets have a lot of power in terms of like forecasting and decision making. But I think like in a crypto context, what's really interesting and powerful is the fact that essentially we can build these like global efficient marketplaces. And so I really believe that markets in general accelerate human progress. Like if it wasn't for markets, we wouldn't be where we were today in almost every field. And even like they have positive trickle down effects to like science funding. For example, Brian Armstrong sells his Coinbase stock to fund like moonshots and science funding. That's a trivial example in a global context, but still kind of proves the point. And I think that like building prediction markets on chain can be defensive in the sense that we actually have a capital formation and wealth generation outside of the nation state in this kind of global on-chain economy. And I think why that's defensive is because we can build these kind of resilient, independent, decentralized systems that manage to kind of form their own capital like without, for example, being taxed on it, also without the very heavy regulation, which is a big issue. There are only 16 designated contract makers in the United States. There are 16 licensed derivatives exchanges, but money cannot move globally at the speed of info in the traditional system. Here it can, and we can build these really powerful marketplaces that are global and accelerate human progress.
I completely agree. I think markets are a very important piece of technology. I actually do believe that one of the reasons that we are able to accelerate defense, particularly with prediction markets, is because we're basically getting rid of any authority's ability to lie to us, right? Because we can delegate information and truth to markets. I think this is great. And actually, speaking about this, if you think about Futaki so far, as you said, we've had lots of messy details. I'd love to know what you think the key challenges in implementing Futaki will be for reward organizational decision making.
Right. Some challenges, of course. Robin mentioned the matter of the autist and in the boardroom. So there's always this this risk that prediction markets and also decision markets are sometimes threatening to the power of insiders on some organizations that maybe are not making the most efficient decisions. So this is for sure a big challenge. So another challenge that is Martin, I'm going to try to connect the previous question from Martin to the combinatorial market idea from Robin, which is part of our basically our grand vision on Futaki, which is so the matter of noise. When we're evaluating a potentially a small or medium-sized proposal or decision in a company, many of those, if they're relatively small or medium, you're not going to have a clear impact, visible impact on the share price. So that makes it really hard to use this directly to estimate. But if you've had a full network or a full tree where you can see, like you can see, you could have markets for share price or token price, but connected to these, you also see the KPIs, markets for different KPIs, number of users, revenue, other kinds of metrics important for the company. So you could actually see, okay, maybe there's a lot of noise. I don't see the impact of this decision on the share, token price, but I see the impact of this decision on this minor KPI that has this, but this minor KPI is associated with this major KPI, which isn't then related to the share price. So I think that's this is brand vision for many decisions is actually have the markets, all the information connected to each other.
But maybe to kind of reorient the question, what problems are you running into building and operating these things? Prediction markets, futile keys, what are the hard problems? What are the solutions?
Yeah, I can say one hard problem, relatively hard problem is to just find traders that are comfortable kind of going into those positions. And just to give you an example of, let's say, we would do this for Ethereum. We would say, okay, conditional, we might go this route roadmap or that roadmap, and then we want to use this futile key mechanism, so essentially people can say, conditionally to this roadmap, I buy Ether, and conditional to that, I sell. But then, to practically do that, you need to believe that the, going back to this correctness of prices, I mean, yes, 6% is in a day, but I mean, what is really the fair price of Ether right now? And I think there could be a range of, some people believe it should be 10,000 and some people would believe it could be less than 1,000. So if you are in the camp of it should be 10,000, then kind of probably in even in both decisions, you would say, well, I want to be long Ether, I want to hold Ether. And if you're in the camp of, well, this is really not worth it, it's just worth 10,000, then again, in both sides. So you need that person that says, well, the price is pretty much right now, and really that decision makes a marginal difference for me to hold the asset. And then let's say there's a really good proposal, and you really like that, so you go long on that. Now you hold this conditional, yes. Now the next day, some external, completely unrelated event happens where the whole crypto market crashes by 50%. You hold this yes proposal and hold it under price of the price from yesterday. You still think the proposal is good, but now your incentives are to for the proposal absolutely to not pass, because then you would hold all the dollars. And not the asset at a price that's now 50%, or where the real asset is now 50% cheaper from what you bought it. So, not sure if anyone could follow, but those are kind of the challenges I see.
So 20 years ago, we had a burst of applications of prediction markets, including in corporations. So I think we saw typical failure modes there that are instructive about today. Typically, if you went to work with a company about setting a prediction market, you would say, well, what are your most important issues and you know, numbers you'd like to track, and let's set up markets on those. And they would usually say, that's a little sensitive. Let's do something a little safer. And they would pick safer topics, and then they'd get accurate estimates on them and satisfied users. But they go, yeah, but we didn't really care about those. So you know, that would be one outcome. Or you know, they would say, talk about something important, and then management couldn't resist having opinions that disagreed with the market, and the market gets proven right and the management wrong, and they're just really mad and want to kill it. So, for example, the US government missile test agency had prediction markets on which tests would actually go forward. So they try to make a lot of tests, and a lot of them don't actually happen because they have to coordinate a lot of different parts of the military, make a test happen, and if one part isn't there, the whole thing has to be scrapped, and a lot of money is lost. And so they wanted to know which things would actually happen, and they actually were able to better estimate which tests would actually go through it and maybe save money by cutting back earlier. But then it was more legible that they knew ahead of time that it wasn't going to work, and that was a management problem, so they didn't want that anymore. They'd rather pretend they don't know how these things are failing.
Yeah, I guess I'm gonna like talk about this from more like consumer product building perspective, less like the futurology side. And I think definitely like and historically, it's absolutely true that marketplaces are like very hard like products to bootstrap and to activate like the atomic like network effect. I think that like it's definitely like to incentivize like market makers or liquidity providers, especially for things like pop culture markets, right? I mean, you can always build the model for like elections or sports markets, or especially in limitless cases like the financial markets, right? You can use the volatility to understand how to price them, and so it can be attractive to institutional market makers because it's essentially like a short-term retail option flow. But at the same time, you know, you may look at Polymarket, how much they spend per month to incentivize market makers to come like into their order book. Actually, I spent a lot of time previously, and like I spoke to Robin about it in Berkeley, like kind of obsessing about incremental improvements in the AMM, which we see, like, for example, like Paradigm just launched the PM AMM, right? We're actually gonna spin up a contract for it to see how much of an improvement is it. But I definitely think that challenge is like, how do you incentivize the market makers? Either you use cash or you use your token or what, but it's still a huge expense for bootstrapping like the initial network. Yeah, but maybe over time it will be worth it.
All right, brilliant. Thank you so much, CJ. Thank you, Kelvin. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to visit archive.devcon.org to watch and listen to all the other DevCon talks. We look forward to seeing you next time.